It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970. Is there like some rule that fat women have to have little tiny dogs? I'm looking at the cover of this week's National Enquirer.
Are you saying something since I was saying I was holding Muppet?
No, I'm saying look at this. It's apparently, let's see. Liz Alzheimer's treasure. It's a picture of Liz Taylor.
Oh, she's going to be on Larry King tomorrow night.
Really?
I mean, it's tonight.
It's just like every cliche come to life. A couple things. So here's Liz Taylor, again, who is a raven-haired beauty in her day. Let's be fair. Hold on. I got to pause and drink some coffee. This will be gripping radio. Don't go anywhere. I just, I don't want people to think there's something wrong. I want everybody to know that I'm here. I don't want any panicking.
It'll make you sound more human.
it's Relatable Tuesday. Hold on. I drink coffee, too. I also drink fluids. Rick drinks liquids, and I do. This is the station for me and my family. All right, there you go. So here's the thing about this, Liz. This Elizabeth Taylor cover. She was a very beautiful woman in her day, but it's like every cliche in one, where she's on the front of the Enquirer, huge fat woman, little tiny white poodle, she's got the big Mrs. Roper moo-moo on, and then she's got like the big, like, I don't understand why it is that when women reach a certain age, suddenly they all have to get that one hairstyle. Where it's like, you know, that not the full-on beehive.
I'm scared of that hairstyle. Why? I know, because you meet a lot of women who were like really hip when they're younger, and then all of a sudden they all cut it.
They all get Nancy Reagan's hairdo. And I'm not talking about the full-on 50s B-52 hairdo. I'm talking about just the, you know what I mean? Where it's like the eggshell, the bun.
The volcano cut.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Why is that? It's like I talk about with men, that men, like now, I am 33 years of age. I am, approaching middle age, but I am not an old man as of yet. And I am aware right now of certain things that you just don't do. We were talking about this recently, how I know that you don't pull your pants up to your nipples. I'm aware that it's just a thing that I should never do. It's a fashion choice that I should eschew. But at some point, you hit some sort of pant nipple event horizon at the age of 65, and the part of your brain that knows that you shouldn't dress that way, like, it just desiccates away. It withers and dies. And so, like, one day you're dressed normally, next day you come out and you're dressed like that guy in your block who's like 90 million years old and just stands out there, and like, watering his grass with a garden hose and no attachment on the front of it. You start dressing like that guy because the part of your brain that understands that that's not right is no longer there. The equivalent of that when you are a woman is the part of your brain that understands that you should not have this hairdo, the hairdo that you see in your grandmother, the hairdo you see on every woman at every nursing home everywhere. All women hit 65, bam, there goes that. You know what I saw yesterday, 2 days ago? I was standing in line at the Safeway buying something or other. Woman comes up behind me, actual, literal, true-to-life blue hair. Like and not in a cool, like, look at me, I'm old and I got blue hair kind of way. It was like, look at me, I'm old and I got blue hair. You always hear about blue-haired old women, and you sort of think that it's just a figure of speech, not a thing you really see. Hair was freaking blue. I mean, why would you? Why is that?
Because
these are not rhetorical questions.
No,
I'm
going to give you an answer.
I want to know.
No, because hair gets really, if it's blonde or white, it gets really brassy, and so you use like purple or blue shampoo. I use the purple shampoo every day. You use purple to counteract the brassiness.
Yeah, it doesn't really. It's not really working. It's just turning their hair blue.
I know, but sometimes they go...
They don't really notice that.
Yeah, they don't understand.
The color discernment genes have just... They're also not there. All right. We'll go to the City Desk here in a moment. Coming up later on this hour, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Dennis Pitzenbarger from the Portland Tribune. And we will recap the Marie Osmond and her slut daughters story in this week's National Enquirer. Attention, Tim Riley. New Hampshire is nation's most livable state, by the way. Just in case you were wondering. Tim Riley was rubbing his hands together and cackling with childlike glee 10 days ago because there was flooding in New Hampshire, which apparently it destroyed the homes of some sworn enemies of yours.
It did. It is the most boring place on the face of the earth.
I came in and Tim said, I'm in such a good mood today, and it's all about flooding in New Hampshire. All right, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
And I'll tell you exactly why. It's because of this piece of lakefront property that I lost my shirt on many years ago, where the lake no longer exists. It drained down the mountainside,
listen to
leaving
the
an empty lake bed.
All right.
There is revenge in this world. Okay. I ended up selling at a loss of thousands. Well, anyway.
But now it's been destroyed.
It has been.
Now your enemies have been vanquished and smited, so everything works out all right in the end.
Lake? What lake? Okay. Anyway, let's get on with the news, shall we? New York cops have begun tagging New Yorkers' iPods, cell phones, and Blackberries with an invisible ink code that can help people. Actually, New York police are looking for iPods. Imagine that, stolen iPods. Cell phones and Blackberries, I don't think that would happen here. The etching program is free. Some strap hangers in Midtown say they like the idea that a lost or stolen item could be returned by the cops.
I always lose my phone, so, you know, it's easy to track down where it's at. If it's stolen, I mean, you can always find out exactly who's using it, where they're at.
What is this story about? I wouldn't even really listen.
New Yorkers are tagging iPods, cell phones, and Blackberries to find them after they've been stolen.
All right.
So they're going to go looking for these things.
Yeah, it's good to know. Good to know that the authorities can track down iPods. Mm-hmm. Isn't it, Sarah?
I can sleep well at night.
All right.
Well, the women of Maxim Magazine's Hot 100 list this year are being featured on a new VH1 special. Host and knit/tech star Kelly Cole. This isn't Kelly Clarkson, is it? It's Kelly Carlson. Says viewers can look forward to a steamy program.
Oh, I'm sorry. And
number two.
It's going to be funny, and it'll be cute, and obviously the show's going to be hot, because they're going to put together a bunch of B-roll clips from everybody's shoots.
It's going to be funny and cute and hot. How can I say no to that?
She's brilliant.
Topping the list for the second straight year is Desperate Housewives star Eva Longoria. The women of the Hunt 100 are chosen based on the buzz around them, their undeniable beauty, and the promise that greater things are yet to come. Kelly Carlson says she's honored to be included on the list.
It's a big compliment. You know, how many people in the world get to be a Maxim Hot 100 girl? And it's just a big compliment. Really, really nice.
Yeah, she sounds like she's full of personality and spunk. All right.
Time for the Geek Watch.
Here's your Geek Watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... And I just listened on it.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
Comic book heroine Batwoman is about to make a comeback as a, quote, lipstick lesbian, unquote, who moonlights as a crime fighter, says a DC Comics spokesperson. Batwoman, whose real name is Kathy Kane, will appear in 52, a year-long DC comic publication that began this month. In her latest incarnation, she is a rich socialite who has a romantic history with another 52 character, ex-police detective Renee Montoya. 52 will be published in the UK as a graphic novel by Titan Books in 2007. The series is set in the world in which established superheroes like Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman no longer play a part. The new Batwoman is just one of a wave of ethnically and sexually diverse characters entering the DC comic universe.
She looks all intimidating, too. You see the picture of her. She looks like she would beat your ass senseless.
Others include Mexican teenager Blue Beetle, who replaces the character's previous white incarnation, and the Great Ten, a government-sponsored team of Chinese superheroes.
I realize sometimes just how little I know about the comic book world, because I have only the vaguest idea of the Blue Beetle. Even the Blue Beetle's what was that comic I read when I was a kid? It was Black Lightning. And Black Lightning was this character that existed in the 70s, who I think is gone now. I'm sure that Aaron could fill me in on this, but he was like there. He was the attempt to have a prominent black superhero. And of course, you look at him now, and he's like the hugest fro you've ever seen in your life, and he's got like the shirt that's open to his navel and so forth. And they try. tried to sell the Black Lightning comic, and no one bought it because when I would buy comics as a kid, I would buy them in these packs at the store, where it was like a buck or whatever, and you would get like 10 of them in this sealed plastic package, but it was packaged in such a way that it was like a grab bag. And grab bag, and you all know this, if you have these when you were kids, a grab bag is code for a bunch of crap that we can't sell to anybody, that no one will actually voluntarily pay money for. And so therefore, we have to give it to you under, like, it has to be wrapped in something that disguises its own true nature. So I would buy these big comic grab bags, and we'd get it home, and it would just be endless comics that, like, no one wanted. It's just like comics that were written in Mandarin Chinese, just like comics I can't do anything with that hold no interest to anyone. So, anyways, I think taking another crack at it. By the way, speaking of geeks, those of you who listened yesterday, which is a fantastic program, by the way, we've recapped most of the things that happened yesterday, but we had Aaron Geek in the City Duran, who was in the studio with us yesterday, as well as Clyde Lewis, because we are now 1 week away from June 6th, 2006, from 666. We're a week away from that, and so as part of that, of course, we got the big Horns Across the Hawthorne thing, which I've started to see little references to that popping up on other people's blogs. Other people are mentioning it. The word is spreading, like a spreading thing. And so that is going to be happening next Tuesday. Everybody's going to be gathering at 5:30 there at the Grassy Knoll on the whatever it is, the eastern side, western side?
Northwest.
Promenade.
I just read it a minute ago. This is why I have everything written down. We'll be gathering on the Grassy Knoll just below the Northwest Pedestrian entrance to the Hawthorne Bridge next Tuesday, 5:30. And then we will go up, we'll line the bridge, do the thing. As part of that day, we're going to have this ongoing Dungeons & Dragons game that's going to be happening in the background of the show that we will cut away to. And so Aaron Geek in the City is going to be part of that. The engineering staff here, they, of course, went away with that. And I got an email from Will Price, who is one of our engineering and IT guys, informing me that he has, and I'm quoting now, 250 small pewter action figurines that he will be bringing along for said game, which will be taking place. So there you go. So we will be having all of that exciting action next Tuesday, because Rick Emerson dares to take the program where no one has gone before. There's your Geek Watch for Tuesday.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
By the way, talking about this the nonsense of Pat Robertson saying he bench pressed 2,000 pounds, this is from Steve. Rick, in case you are curious, anybody know what the world record leg press weight is? Anyone?
No.
Could you possibly care less?
No.
The record is 1,335 pounds set by Dan Kendra. By the way, he blew out all the capillaries in his eyeballs. So, there you go. Good times, kids. Don't try that at home. How about this? Here's a conversation I imagine happening in the doctor's office, Rick. Doctor to Liz Taylor. Ms. Taylor, this is an email, by the way. This is not me, Rick Emerson, saying this. I'm merely conveying the thoughts and suppositions of one audience member. Doctor to Liz. Ms. Taylor, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is you have Alzheimer's. The good news is you have 20 years to live. Liz Taylor. Well, at least I don't have Alzheimer's. At least I don't have Alzheimer's. Maybe somebody told me that joke and I forgot it. I've never heard that joke before. I thought I knew all the Alzheimer's jokes. I am not encouraging people, by the way, to call up with an endless list of Alzheimer's jokes. That would be wrong. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's see what's on the television tonight. War of the Worlds. A man and his children try to survive an alien invasion, and they do, with Tom Cruise and Dakota Fanning. Dirty Jobs, Mushroom Farming, and immediately followed by The Profession of Hot Tar Roofing. Brendan Lee stars in The Cow. Oh, that's a crow. A rock star raises from the dead to avenge a murder.
In India.
From 1994.
They're all dead. They just don't know it yet.
And last comic standing, this is a season premiere. Talent scouts travel the country looking for aspiring comics.
I thought that show got canceled. It's so hard to figure out what's been canceled and what hasn't now. Because stuff gets canceled, and then it goes into syndication somewhere else, or stuff gets canceled and then it gets revised on some other network. I thought Last Comic Standing, I swear to God that show got canceled, and here's why I remember that. It's because there was all of this ruckus over the fact that they canceled it before ever showing that, like, they canceled it one episode before the end. Like, they were coming up on the season finale, and they canceled it the week before the season finale. Well, who can tell? All right.
Oh, am I still here?
Let's do. We got this big pile of watches that we haven't gotten to. I'm trying to get through as many of these as possible because the list of watches is really stacking. It's higher and higher.
Let's do the Darwin watch.
Here's your Darwin watch for Tuesday, right here on this, the Rick Emerson Radio
program.
I have a
feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
This comes to us from Detroit. Another person died from a probable drug overdose. Say Wayne County health officials bring the toll to 48 people who have died since May 19th. Even though the number was dropping for the multiple deaths per day, health officials are ready to say the deadly overdose spurt is tapering off. Toxicology results won't be available for several weeks, but health officials say they believe the deaths have been caused by a dangerous combination of heroin or cocaine or the painkiller fentanyl.
This heroin is lethal.
The latest surge in deaths come to the public's attention when Wayne County issued a warning on May 19th because 12 people had died over a 24-hour span. Since then, the county has distributed at least 20,000 flyers warning people of the dangers of the illegal street drug and urged drug addicts to get treatment rather than risk the using the substance at all. Let's see. Neither Oakland nor Macomb County reported any drug overdoses over the weekends.
All right. Positive. There you go. There's your Darwin watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson Show.
Don't. Another one bites the dust. Don't. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
All right, I got the. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read the. We'll recap the Inquirer. We will read the Steven Seagal concert review, and then we will take a break. Coming up, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian to talk about the upcoming Sopranos quasi season finale, and Dennis Pitzenberger from the Portland Tribune. Like us at three, world famous Phil Henry Show at 7, and then we'll hit the city desk one more time at the bottom of the hour. Rick, this is from Chris. Rick, I'm sure you've heard enough about Steven Seagal. And due to various barbecue functions, I was feeling a bit too out of it yesterday to give the show my full attention. Much forgiveness, please. Anyway, here's my two cents. Seagal's band looked like many of the extras you see him kicking the snot out of in his movies. The opening song contained a lyric that contained the words scrambled and eggs and bacon. There was much head bobbing and chin fat shaking. I think chin fat shaking is he's an emerging action star in Hong Kong. I don't think he can fully open his eyes without a struggle, by the way. There's too much fat holding them down. When the show ended, he just unplugged the guitar and walked off stage while the band was still playing the song. They seemed confused. I think he heard the oven timer for his steak-em go off backstage. The encore sounded like a mashed-up version of Who Do You Love and I Want Candy. And Mr. Seagal again walked off stage mid-set as if the microwave had dinged and his popcorn was done. The music was okay due to an impressive band, and Seagal wasn't quite as fat as I thought he would be, although I think he put us all in a trance-like state when he wobbled around on stage in an attempt to dance, kind of like staring at a lava lamp. All in all, a fantastic program. Thank you for your time. That is Chris, also known as Boba Fett. So there you go. All right, we'll quickly do this, the Inquirer stuff. And then we got a break. All right, so I've got this. Do we have the McCartney watch theme? All right, let's roll an ad hoc Paul McCartney's one-legged soon-to-be ex-wife watch here on Tuesday.
Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on.
All right, this is from the Inquirer. McCartney Divorce, The Final Showdown. Heather's hysterical... By the way, we've talked a lot on this show about the tote boards and about the like-dislike factor. And as Roger Waters would say, there's lines on the board that move from side to side. And at a certain point, you do reach this sort of tipping point where more of the country despises you than likes you. Sometimes it's for a real reason. Like with...
J-Lo.
Well, Betsy, I was going to say her, but there's no real reason for that either. She's just a succubus. She's just an untalented, big-ass woman who everybody dislikes. Who have we started? Tom Cruise. There's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Gave us a whole boatload of reasons to dislike him because he's crazy and whatnot. Sometimes, though, there's no real reason. Everybody just despises you. So it is with Heather Mills, who is the soon-to-be ex-wife of Paul McCartney. I think she's someone that everybody just sort of... They never really actively disliked her, but they never liked her. I think from the minute Paul McCartney got married to her, everybody just sort of... They either disliked her or they felt nothing at all. They were just like waiting for a reason. Soon as the divorce happens, bam, everyone in England despises her. Paul McCartney's marriage ended in a final vicious scream fest, says the Inquirer, when the pop star decided he could no longer take being a henpecked husband. You would think... It seems to me that if you got Paul McCartney to marry you, it really, as Ringo Starr would say, that's like winning the pools, sister. I mean, it's 6 billion people on Earth. You get a guy who's worth, $2-3 billion, I think we heard last week. He's probably the single most famous living celebrity on Earth. Undoubtedly the most famous living musician on Earth. One of the 10 most famous people of the last century. You got one leg. You get that guy to marry you. I would think you'd just be walking around real quietly and being very deferential. The showdown, apparently I am wrong. The showdown came during a nasty fight while the couple was on a recent ski trip in Switzerland, says a source close to McCartney. It ended with wife Heather Mills, insert hopping mad joke here, hysterical. She just lost it, says the insider. She was in tears of rage, screaming at Paul that he didn't care about her. Heather ranted at him till he could take no more. Paul tried to calm her down, but in the end, he left the room. That's when Paul decided he could not continue the marriage. He told a pal he was at the end of his rope. He's decided right there that he couldn't take any more. Friends say that mild-mannered McCartney, age 63... I thought he was 60... No, we know he's not 64, because every idiotic radio station would be plaguing us with the stupid... I'm making the vow right now that we're not going to allow that to happen on this radio station. I am pledging right now that we will make no When I Am 64 jokes or references. It's not going to happen. We will differentiate ourselves by not doing that.
The liners are in the production bin.
I'm telling you, they're probably at K-Hits right now. We could probably look in the automation system at this moment, and K-Hits has probably already got those done. McCartney suffered for years under the thumb of his bullying wife, giving into her incessant demands in order to keep peace in the marriage. Finally, he just couldn't take it anymore. One source revealed... Paul tried everything to make their marriage work. He took insults. Imagine being insulted by a one-legged woman. He took insults and swallowed his pride just to smooth over their violent rows. This guy is idolized by millions of women, but he lost his heart to one who humiliated him. Heather, who lost her left leg when she was struck by a motorcycle, was shocked when Paul dumped her, said another friend. She never dreamed that Paul would turn on her. She was the one who called the shots. The super tough... What do you not understand?
I'm surprised they didn't write with the motorcycle accident like she deserved it.
Well, I mean...
They're just battering her.
I don't... Look, I don't care who's right and who's wrong. You don't get the world's richest guy to dump you. It doesn't happen. Why? He told the friend, I can't live like this. She's always fighting. It's just never going to work. And then, wait for it. Heather, 38, became pregnant, and Paul believed a baby would mellow his fiery bride. Yes, because babies never make crazy women crazier. That never happens. Every woman who gets pregnant immediately becomes stable and calm and rational. But things didn't change after the birth of their daughter, Beatrice. Listen to this. Heather, cue more reasons to hate Heather Mills. She banned Beatles and Wings music from the house.
Oh, yeah, right.
And instead insisted on playing... Bon Jovi songs constantly. She insisted on painting over Linda's favorite colors at the McCartney house and even overruled Paul on the choice of name. Paul!
If you get yourself into that, you should know you're always going to be number two.
Seriously.
Like, she should have been smart enough to know that.
God damn. I'd marry Paul McCartney. I'd do it right now. I'd do it for a tenth of whatever she's going to get. All right, there you go. Well, let's end that.
Well, that's a shame.
There's the Paul McCartney's one-legged soon-to-be ex-wife watch. We'll,
Lean on me when you're not.
See, for like half a second, I felt really bad about this watch thing, but I don't anymore. All right.
I'll help you carry
on. This is, the final piece we'll read. Here on the Rick Emerson Show, we read the Inquirer so you don't have to. We're sparing you the shame. This is like that service where you can, you know, like you can hire somebody to go buy your Viagra for you. You have to look, you have to be all embarrassed. We will read the embarrassing tabloids and pass the information along to you. Now, we had a sort of a expurgated version of this story last week. Marie, do we have the porn music for this?
Sure.
This is from the New Inquirer. Marie Osmond daughters post sex secrets on the internet. The squeaky clean image of the Osmond family may be skipping a generation. Marie Osmond's teenage daughters, Jessica and Rachel, have posted enough obscene and scandalous material on the internet to make a sailor blush, let alone a devoutly Mormon family. Jessica, age 18, who uses the screen name F Off. She's a classy one. Writes on the website MySpace.com that she is bisexual and wants sex on a daily basis as many times as possible. She describes her favorite positions and graphically describes other intimate details about her sex life. Her hero... Her heroes are not exactly those of a good Mormon. Jessica lists among her role models Adolf Hitler. That's fantastic.
She's very rebellious.
Jesus God. Pictures of the teen, who was adopted by Marie and her husband Brian as an infant, include a close-up that shows a ring in her pierced lip. 16-year-old daughter Rachel, Marie's biological daughter, is no less rebellious. On her MySpace website, she describes in very crude terms her fantasy to sleep with rock star David Bowie. And she says she enjoys, quote, having sleepovers with cute boys. As for religion, Rachel says she's an avowed agnostic. In messages Rachel sent to her sister, which were publicly posted on MySpace, she gets down and dirty about her love life. She states she officially has a boyfriend and says, quote, so I guess that puts an end to my slut days. Actually, I'll just focus all my aggression that I would have towards him on towards every other boy onto him. It'll be like six girls hitting on him at once. Rachel then says in another message that she needs to tell her about my extreme night last night. I had a blast, she says, and last night proves that I'm a whore.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ. MySpace, which boasts 78 million members, has come under fire from critics who say it's being used by kids to spew hatred. And the site attracts sexual predators. That's hard to believe. MySpace operators recently appointed a safety manager to monitor the material posted. Marie is heartbroken about her daughter's activities on the internet and is doing her best to straighten out the kids. An insider said the Inquirer told the Inquirer Marie has always had her hands full with her children. Marie is apparently not the only one who has her hands full with the Osmond children. So, all right, there
Where
you go.
Where are they from?
They're from Provo or Salt Lake or whatever. Some godforsaken place. Provo, Utah, which is, by the way, the 11th greatest state in the country in which to live. New Hampshire being number one, Oregon being number 38, by the way. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. We got Dennis Pitzenbarger, Peter Carlin, all of that, Tim Riley at the City Desk, Like Us at 3. World-famous Phil Hendry Show at 7 coming up. You stay there. The Rick Emerson Show continues after this. It's AM 970, Solid State Radio. Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. People are asking, no, I do not have the I do not have the link to the Marie Osmond daughter, Mike. Because are they gone?
Yeah, I haven't been. Our computer's so slow here, I can't find it.
Yeah, all right.
I'll do it at home.
Yeah, because there was the two. There was the, Jessica and Rachel. Jessica is the one who, Jessica's the one who lists Hitler as a role model and is a gay, apparently. Rick, let's see. Are you marrying Paul McCartney? I could see him marrying a bald, chubby man after getting burned by the pogo woman. Thank you. Oh, that's from Justin, by the way. That's from Signed the Gym Rat. It's said with love. Rick, about Paul McCartney and when I'm 64. Aren't you the same Rick who promised never to watch American Idol? Aren't you the same Rick who promised never to give George Lucas any more money? You'll fall into the trap like every other hack DJ, you dork. Signed, Gay Bob. Rick, about... Oh, this is from our good friend Todd the Corpse.
Come on!
Rick, you're right. Last Comic Standing was hosted by Jay Moore. It was indeed canceled the week before the big finale. I've heard the dude who won, I cannot remember his name, interviewed on your very own Comedy Radio. And he says no one would give any sort of answer to what happened, but apparently it's back and is hosted by the guy from Yes, Dear and not Jay Moore. By the way, I realized I got all the way through this email and don't really care. All right, that's
I just finished Action. Well, I have one episode left.
Oh, that's the best show
Jay
ever.
Moore, I have developed a new love for him.
I'm all over that guy. I'm the biggest fan of that guy. Let us welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend Dennis Pitchenbarger from the... Oh, I don't have... we still have never gotten him a song. Wait, hold on.
We built this Starbucks.
There you go. Thank you. I'm not going to be the only one with this in my head. And let me tell you this about this Starbucks song, which many people still think is... You know, it's like a Weird Al parody or whatever. This is, as we've noted many times, the official corporate pride song of Starbucks. They play this at their management gatherings. The part that I get stuck in my head over and over and over...
I know, the green apron.
It's totally that living the ways of being, which that sounds like a Zen koan. It doesn't even make any sense. Right. How are you, Dennis?
I'm doing well.
Wow. You've been here for like 40 minutes.
I've been here since like 11:30.
It's like, no, you got to tell me about that. We just would have kept going. I had no idea you were even here.
Well, I mean, you know, the last 3 weeks I only talked for 3 minutes.
Hey,
so I think
bring up old stuff.
No, it was fun. I thought it was funny. I walked in the studio. The first thing I asked Sarah was, are you one of the many that don't remember anything from Brad's wedding post about 9 o'clock?
Yeah, well, and I did not attend. There were a variety of reasons, largely because I'm just antisocial.
It's true.
So Brad's wedding happened on Saturday. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. I don't know how many people were listening, but there's a whole lot of discussions yesterday. One of them revolved around the fact that you went to a wedding. This is Brad, the car guy, who's many people have heard on this program. He's called in. He met up at the listener parties. So Brad got married. Brad and Eve got married over the weekend.
Yes. Great wedding. I mean, beautiful, by the way.
Well, I could tell from the invitations that it was going to be expensive. You just, like, look. You know, they weren't like our indications. Like, I printed them out at home, you know.
No, there
like the bad Kinko's paper, you know. And but so the wedding happened on Saturday, and there was, like, the huge reception afterward. And then at a certain point on Saturday, Sarah's phone, it wasn't stolen, but it sort of, you know, just kind of got picked up and sort of passed around.
Yeah. Well, I let somebody borrow it, and then I'm like, uh-oh, that might have not been a good thing to do.
And so then, I don't know, at around 10:30, 11 o'clock Saturday night, my phone started to ring, and I looked down, and it claimed that it was Sarah calling. It was not. It was a series of increasingly drunken and explicit homoerotic messages.
Oh, that had to have been Jeff Klein. I'm just saying, I know Jeff.
Four,
it had
five, six.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Seven. Well, yes, it was.
I'm sorry.
I was waiting to see if anybody was going to reach for the delete button.
Oh no, no, I know Jeff. He was sending out messages of I'm holding your chips. You know.
Yeah, it was a lot of because Jeff is in many of our poker games, and it was a whole lot of like, so here I am, Rick, with a big chip stack, and it's like, and I mean, you know.
The stories got better. You know, he started throwing. I mean, you know, here it is. I mean, this is a very expensive wedding. Very fancy. Very nice. A lot of reserved family, older family members there. I believe Evie's grandparents are married 79 years, something like that.
Was that the guy in the red crushed velvet tuxedo?
Yes. Oh, just beautiful. I mean, it so just cute. Makes you want to get married and be with somebody forever. And it's just funny because here's Jeff then standing on a table throwing wedding cake at people. So... That's for those of you know that Jeff. I mean, only Jeff can pull somebody.
For the four people in the audience now that can relate to this because they know what we're talking about.
Well, nobody. Hey, and
that's okay.
Tons of people that were at the wedding who listened to you have no idea it happened either.
No, it's so. Yes. So yesterday, though, this all ended, by the way, with me because I had neglected to mention to my wife And oh, by the way, this guy was calling and leaving me homoerotic messages all Saturday night. It has just sort of slipped my mind to mention that to her.
Yeah.
So that was, this ends, wait, this all ends up yesterday with Laura calling. What did it, she called up, so my wife ended up calling, and she did that Sarah Dillon thing of saying, well, I give you permission, should you ever wish to make out with a guy, to make out with Jeff. This is the, because she was giving me the whole, because was it Sarah, was it you the one that had this whole contention that it's, that everybody's got their one time? Was that your thing?
No, that wasn't me, and you keep pinning it on me.
Well, I don't know, because I wasn't there. So
I don't know if I would profess that out loud, because he is a bit stronger and larger than you. He could corner you quite easily.
I'm just saying, it turned into another one of those shows yesterday, as it so often does, like three out of every five shows, where some combination of my wife and Sarah and, like, random other female listeners are, like, trying to get me to kiss somebody.
I know, but it's something that I think sounds funny in my head, and then if it actually happened, I don't think I'd like it.
Yeah, you, me both.
You can take me off that list. Yeah. I'm just saying, don't put me on that.
No, that's what I'm...
proposed list of maker-outers.
Yeah, dude, I'm with you on that. Ooh. So, it's just one of those things.
I thought it was interesting. I want to talk about your car.
Yeah, so because we're talking about how Sarah's car got destroyed.
Oregon traffic and insurance report right here.
It was a whole weekend of bizarre incidents.
Now, you had that brand-new audio system put in that car, didn't you, yesterday? The one that is now... didn't you have a Picasso in the trunk?
Yeah, see, you should totally be taking this opportunity, because correct me if I'm wrong, so kids, if you didn't hear it.
No, I want that person to have the bad karma, not me. I didn't do anything.
Well, but I mean, so your car was parked on Sunday. Just long story short, so another car smashed into Sarah's car parked on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people literally, you're about to hit and run, they literally hit your car and they got on, they ran away.
With the door still open when I came out.
With the door still open. I mean, how far could they possibly have gotten?
Yeah.
Was it right in front or on the side?
It was on
49th, right? Just right around the corner. It's like, how far could they go? I mean, it's Southeast Portland on a Sunday night on a three-day weekend. You know, the cops are probably crawling all over that neighborhood all the time anyway. Like, how long could it take to find some people probably drunk running on foot after dark through Southeast Portland?
Well, you turn into an eight-year-old. I mean, all of a sudden they're like, if we make it to Mount Tabor Park, we can hide in the dog area. You know,
I mean, they're driving a little tiny car, so you know they're morbidly obese. That's the way that always works.
Yeah.
It's always fat people. It's like clown cars. It's fat people in a little tiny car.
Chevy Aveo? No. What was it?
It was a Ford Aspire.
Aspire. Aspire to lose 400 pounds.
So...
Yeah.
So this is,
Lord.
Yeah, so, I mean, and the people who, the car was registered to, like, some woman who was 98 years old, you know, like, clearly not the person driving.
Oh, it was like 14-year-old kids drunk, you know, sniffing, gas fumes or something.
Grandma, can we take your car? Sure, have it back in an hour, you know, barreling down Hawthorne.
That's what I'm hoping, but I mean, I thought that I know that people have called in so that the police are busy. I respect the fact that they're busy, but... If they have this person's name and they know that they caused this big accident on Hawthorne that tied up 49th for like an hour.
Yeah, there's been a whole lot of, you're never going to get anything calls.
Oh, you're not. I mean, unless there's bloodshed. I mean, I have drug dealers at the end of my corner that I call in every other day. On Memorial Day, they are like riding their bikes with backpacks that are full into the garage. And then backpacks empty riding out of the garage. Like, I mean, this is not brain surgery.
No, it's like that apartment building next to me where it's like a lot of traffic, car traffic at the apartment building that I live in store to, where it's, and the traffic all starts at around 1:30 in the morning.
Yep.
People pull in. They're there for about 3 minutes. They walk out just like hands tucked into their pockets, eyes darting from left to right, and then they drive off. You don't really ever see the same car back that night. They come back once every couple of days or so.
Oh, I
don't worry about it anymore. I just look the other way.
My frequent, you know, thing is that they're stupid. Because these people actually pull up, hit the flashers, and, like, beep the horn.
Seriously?
And then here comes the guy.
Dude, I'm waiting in my nickel bag.
Oh, yeah. The guy comes out in, like, you know, boxers and slippers to the door, does a little exchange.
With
and then
a paper bag.
And I'm sitting there at the end of my block just like, I just want to kill them all.
I've been to your house. You and I live in roughly comparable neighborhood. You and me and Ian Gordon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you do not own a firearm, you must have a dog. I mean, it's...
Seriously. So
I have both, so I'm fine. So,
all right.
You know, whatever. Right?
Well... And I'm so what are you going to do with your car? So it's just that your car is totaled and just sit in front of your house.
It's
what are you going to do with it?
My house. I'm waiting for the insurance company to come and assess the damage.
And then what happens when you can no longer drive the car? Do you just take it off and they make it into a cube somewhere?
I guess so. Well, I took everything out of it today just in case because I don't know, you know, what happened.
Well, here's the deal. What it's a 95 Nissan, right?
It's a 95 Saturn.
Saturn. Okay, that's right. And it was, I mean, I don't know how hard it was hit, but you got to realize that if it was more than 70% of the replacement value, it's totaled. I mean, it's gone. And I mean, if they hit it as hard as they did and it's crunched at both ends, I'm not trying to make fun because it's a 95. I mean, it's 11 years old.
Yeah.
It's probably worth, you know, X amount of dollars. Most likely, it's totaled. The problem is, depending on how good your insurance company is, you'll probably get shafted on that, too.
I know. I got a pretty decent rental car, though. Like, the rental place I went to, like, they set it up. It was really good. Like,
what is it? What is the car you're driving?
A Ford 500.
Oh, that's not
And what
bad.
What is
but
that?
But you got to remember, rental cars, in disputing, you know, your future settlement, it's kind of like when you get a first date, they bring you roses in the nice restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to take real good care of you. Bam!
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's McDonald's and no supersize.
And so, suddenly you're walking into a lot of doors at home.
No, I mean, they'll probably give you a comparable amount of money to go buy a car just like it.
That's depressing. I love my car.
Well, it does suck because people, you know, bad stuff befalls bad people.
And the worst part about, well, not the worst part, but one of the many bad parts about having your car damaged like this is, you. And I know you probably already did this, you do that thing where you wake up in the morning and for a blessed moment you forget.
Yep. I was telling you about that yesterday. Like, when my friend Teresa cut off all my hair in sixth grade and I had really long blonde hair and she said she was going to trim it, but then it ended up, you know, past shorter than my ears.
Did she play a lot of field hockey?
Yes, I think she does now.
I got a great haircut for you, Sarah.
I remember waking up with kind of like a bad feeling, like, oh, wait. No, nothing bad happened. Everything
and then you
glorious.
Look in the mirror.
And then I touch my hair.
No. Yeah, it's like me last year after we got fired. Like, I woke up at a store. Like, what am I going to do on the show today? Don't, you know, stupid life. Yeah. All right. By the way, somebody found, I will post this, somebody found Jessica Osman's MySpace site. Rick, the sex writings are gone, but she still loves women and Hitler. So that's Ryan's. So we'll post that. Ooh. Don't forget, we are coming a week away from Horns Across the Hawthorne, where we will gather next Tuesday on the grassy knoll just below the Northwest Pedestrian entrance at 5:30. Then we will pose for what will be an historic photo.
The grassy knoll. Say. There'll be Cubans there with rifles.
That's like the when I'm 64 thing.
I'm just trying.
The low-hanging comedic fruit. Anyway, so we're going to do that next Tuesday, and then we'll pose for a soon-to-be historic photo, after which we will retire to Dante's for libations and the spinning of the pentagram of prizes. That is coming up next Tuesday, Horns Across the Hawthorne. More information coming by the end of the day at 970.am. Back after this, we're here with Dennis Pitzenbarger, Like Us the Three, world-famous Phil Henry Show at 70 State. The Rick Emerson Show continues on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. Woo! All right, then.
We are all calmed down.
A little venting in the off-air time. These are yours. They're real news, man.
All right. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the program. Well, the day's been a solid 2 out of 10. Here's Tim Riley.
Oh. Okay, just a couple of quick things here. First, I-84 eastbound, milepost 63 in Hood River is closed due to a multi-vehicle crash involving a semi, a tanker truck, a motorhome, and several cars. Then we have a report of a construction worker hit by a truck in the 4300 block of Southwest McAdam. The driver apparently didn't realize he hit someone until the cops stopped.
Oh, it wasn't one of the, like, dragging in the grill, is it?
That's all I know.
I'd like to leave people with a kind of an up feeling for the day. Like to end the show with a kind of sort of a feeling.
And so far, only 54 people have been killed in Iraq, 120 wounded.
There you go.
That's my job.
It's Tim Riley, leaving you with the good news.
Right. Well, on a high note.
Jesus God. Worst day ever. All right.
Oh, come on. Oh. You're such a drama queen.
What?
You're such a drama queen.
Tell that to the guy who's being dragged in a car.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the worst show ever. That is a bad day.
You know, any day that I'm not pushed through a fine mesh screen on the front of a Mercedes is a day that's okay for me.
No. I would have thought the flapping safety vest coming from the hood would
Seriously. I mean, even I know that. I'm a terrible driver, and I notice those guys. All right. Well, so stay away from everything everywhere.
I heard some rumors I don't know if I should bring this up. About the, we were going to chit chat a little, oops, sorry, about a little bit about the Sopranos.
Well, we were supposed to be talking to Peter Carlin today, but it's one of many things that went badly wrong today.
That's okay. So, we can talk about the Sopranos.
Well, here's what we got. I got like 4 minutes here. Okay. And so we have a Soprano. Well, you see, because the deal is there was no actual real, there was no episode this last week. They did like 3 of them. And then there's no actual real season finale until January, because they're doing a sort of half season finale this coming Sunday, and then they're going to do the final 8 episodes of the series in January. And of course, to the best of my knowledge, and we will talk to Peter about this at some point, to the best of my knowledge, those episodes are already done. Weasels, they're just because they know there's this term in the cable industry called Sopranos drop-off. And what happens is, Sopranos season ends, bam, everybody cancels their HBO. And that's a known factor. And they try so hard to pick up the slack with other series. Like Sopranos ends next week, Entourage starts the week after that. And, you know, I'm a huge Entourage fan, and I'm a big fan of HBO, so I'll keep it. But there's a lot of people who know. So this is a penalty, though, if you cancel your HBO at a certain point.
I'm looking forward to Entourage, by the way. I love that show.
Entourage is a fantastic program. But the reason they're spacing out the Sopranos like this is because they want to make people... They want to kind of screw people into not canceling, you know, whatever. So they're stretching this fight because they know that once The Sopranos is done and gone and buried, there's a big, like 30% of those people are going to cancel and they never come back. So they're just trying to wring like every last subscriber out of it as long as they possibly can. So I did not see, I didn't rewatch these last 3 episodes on Sunday because it's like, what's the point? But there's, I mean, I know that Michael Imperioli, he plays Christopher, and the guy who plays Johnny Sack both just signed on, you know, because I guess they are actually doing the final 8 episodes right now. They're already written. They're filming them right now. And they just signed on to be all the way through the end of those. So those guys are on through the end of the series. I don't know what happens at the end of the series.
But there's so many loose ends. The thing that I don't understand, I mean, they've really, the one that has unraveled me the most is what are they going to do with AJ? Because, you know, he's
such a little bastard. He's had it coming. And if you watch The Sopranos for long, AJ has had it coming for like 6 years. And I do not advocate child abuse in any way. But I got to tell you, man,
helmet through the windshield will wake him up.
I think he's an adult now. I think he's like 21. I think he could get a pounding. That kid deserves a bunch of fives, as they say in Britain.
Oh, yeah. The best was when Tony walked right up to him and just quietly said, don't put me to the test. Yeah.
And I thought Tony went through the windshield with that football helmet. I thought he was going to whack the kid. Yeah. Well, I thought he was going to pound the kid in the face.
Some of the best of this season has been, in film and in story, was when AJ had dropped the knife in between his legs.
Totally. It's sort of like my manhood.
Yeah, that was some of the best when he was going to grab Junior. I mean, it was, or just stab him or whatever. But I thought at that point, that's where they were really going to delve into his part of the story, and then all of a sudden he disappeared.
I'm all over the Johnny Sack thing because he is my favorite character who is not Tony. Because Johnny Sack has just got this whole vibe where he is, you can tell that he is just like has contempt that he is surrounded by fools all the time. He's just got this low grade hatred for all humanity that I kind of identify with in a real way. And it's just, I'm going to be curious to see what happens with him. And then there's, you know, all the repercussions of the veto thing. So all of that is coming up. And we did not get to, we didn't really get to this, like the second week, this thing about this, the red light cameras, which I know that we wanted to talk about, but we didn't. We'll get to that probably next week. We got a week until Horns Across the Hawthorne, which are you going to be at that?
Oh, I will be there. I love it because my wife asked me, she goes, well, now, are we going to go?
Are you going to bring the child?
Oh, yeah,
child,
we'll dress her up.
Horns?
We'll put some little kiss makeup on her. Well, she has it out. Well, I don't even want to go into that. My wife asked me, she goes, now, are we going to go to that? And I said, well, absolutely. She goes, well, what do we do? And I said, well, when they take the picture, you just put up, you know, the devil sign. And, I don't know. Sorry about the sound effect there.
Okay.
Blow the meter out. But I mean, once I explained it to her.
People have asked what it is, and it really is a photo op. It really is an op for the best photo ever taken.
Big props to the guy who came up with the logo. The first time I saw that was
the guy in Rogers' audience, just a listener who made that. People said, well, who did you hire to make that? Not just a limit. He's not a guy that we paid to do it. He did it just kind of out of the love of the show. That guy created that.
So you get love. I just get emails like, you're an idiot. That's all I get.
I get love and the sexual propositions.
But unfortunately, hear from men. Men we know.
All right. So that is coming up a week from today, next Tuesday. At 5:30, we're going to be gathering just below the northwest pedestrian entrance to the Hawthorne Bridge, and then we'll be taking the photo at 6:06 next Tuesday. So at 6:06 p.m. on 6:06, we will be taking that photo, after which we will be going to Dante's, and we will be spinning the pentagram of prizes. So be checking 970.am for the details on that, or rickemerson.com. And we have myriad MySpace pages as well that you can be checking. You can go through all of that through rickemerson.com. Dennis Pitsenbarger, Portland Tribune, The Fuel Factor, a new issue comes out when?
Every Friday. And, of course, you can read it on the website. The link is on, well, your website. I'm lucky enough to be there.
There you go. So look on the little left-hand side there. You see the link to that. The Rick Emerson Show, we want to thank CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Coming up tomorrow, it's too big to be held back by five slots. Tomorrow we've been doing the top 10 songs banned by radio stations in the last 50 years in America. It's 503-733-2970. Write that down because we're back in 21 hours. Like us next. World famous Phil Hendry Show at 7. As always, the Rick Emerson Show produced by Sarah X. Dillon. In the newsroom, Tim Riley. Don't let the bastards grind it out. See y'all tomorrow at noon. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Attention FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.